Okay, my devotions in the last, well, several months have been in Kings and Chronicles, and that's one of the things that got me thinking about American history. What's happening here is Hezekiah has come to be king of the southern kingdom after a number of years of bad kings, and Hezekiah says, we need to go back to the God that we worship to begin with. And since we are studying the founding fathers and what their ideas were, I think this is kind of an apropos lesson. Hezekiah said, look, the things that have happened to us have happened because we've abandoned the God that brought us into the land. And it's hard to argue that things in the United States are bad. Teen pregnancy on the rise, teen violence on the rise. Chicago, the most violent city, not only in the United States, but Chicago now is more violent than Palestine. And I think a big part of that is that we have abandoned the God that we worship for most of our history. And it's good to remind ourselves exactly what that history really is. You've got your study guides. We're on lesson two. I realize I didn't put the page numbers in. But lesson two, we're taking a look at the colonies. We're gonna look at most of the 13 colonies, and we're going to spend some time looking at the colonial charters. That is the grant that was given by the king that defined what the purpose of the colony was and what it was supposed to do. Now, if you notice in the handbook, I've got it divided into the colonies that were specifically religious in nature, the colonies that were economic in nature, and then those that were established for defense against the French, the Spanish, the Russians, the native population. So each of them in these very different aspects, and that aspect influenced the character of the colony. But even as you're looking at the religious or defensive colonies, the religious nature of our early forefathers comes very clear. So go ahead and give me my first slide. Okay, colonial America has a much, much longer history than most people realize. Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492. Now, Columbus was never in North America, but following him were Vasco da Gama and several of the others, Pizarro, and they eventually pushed their way up into Florida and what's called the Piedmont area. And once the Spaniards started bringing gold back, that created an interest of France, Russia, England, Prussians to move in. Now the Prussians were the last to get in, and they were driven out fairly quickly by the French, the Spanish, the British, the Russians. And so the first American English settlement is around 1850. There were four of them. They didn't last particularly long. The most famous of these is the Roanoke Colony. Roanoke is established around 1584. Anybody know who the sponsor of the Roanoke Colony was? Very famous Englishman. Sir Walter Raleigh, yes. Now, the Roanoke Colony succeeded. Most people know Roanoke as the Lost Colony, and that's true. What most people don't realize is that the colony had established and had succeeded for almost 20 years before it vanishes. And there are lots and lots of theories about what happened to the Roanoke Colony. Historically, the most plausible explanation is the Roanoke Colony was in between two competing Native American tribes that had fought a number of conflicts. And my suspicion is that the colonists, a large number of them were killed, the women were taken in captivity, and they eventually intermarried and dispersed through the colonists themselves, or through the native tribes themselves. Now, this is, and I was going to put this up there because it actually is in the ancient English, and I'll pass it around and let you look at it. But the purpose of the colony was the people of her highest realm maintain and increase the traffic to the most benefit and comity of her loving subjects, who otherwise should spend their time in idleness to the great prejudice of the Commonwealth. They should be trained in virtuous, commodious labor and engage, perform some great hope of discovery that her trustees will serve Walter Raleigh in an unknown land heretofore never possessed by any Christian prince or Christian people. And then it goes on and say that the purpose of the colony is to evangelize these people, bring them under the gospel. And I'm trying to find the actual, I should have highlighted it. Let's see. Letters being granted. Sorry about that. I should have highlighted it. But yeah, he does say that one of the jobs is to bring the gospel to the native population, train them in the gospel, and help them to stand well with the Lord. I'll pass this out and let you all look at that. Some of the Roanoke members were convicts and were taken and brought in so that they could learn useful arts. Yeah. Yeah, so about half the colonists, the original Roanoke settlement was 102 people, 50 of which were convicts. Now, they weren't murderers and things like that. These were people who were largely in what we call debtor's prison for non-payment of taxes and debts and things like that. And that was one of the problems, was these people didn't know much about farming and agriculture and whatnot. And they also, the thing that these people from debtor's prison did know how to do was make rum, which started a long series of problems with the native population. Don't you love reading that ancient English? Yeah, and what people forget is 1588 isn't that far back, and yet English was dramatically different. The English as we know it today, the spellings as we know it today, are largely a creation of King James and the King James Bible. Now, the grammatical structure and our phraseology, that comes from Shakespeare, but our spelling and actual structure is the King James Bible, which isn't too much farther down the road. And King James has an influence in the colonies. Okay, so this colony is established to challenge Spain's dominance. It's economic, but it was also clearly established to evangelize the natives. And when Walter Raleigh was picking the 102 men to come over, the leader that he picked was a wonderful Quaker man by the name of Evans. He didn't last long. Unfortunately, when he got here, he died of dysentery. But he had a backup minister who led the colony basically until its disappearance. And so the Roanoke colony was Anglican because Walter Raleigh had the authority of the crown, but there was also a large Quaker element in it. And they don't last long. And as you look over the charter, you'll see it's all sorts of interesting stuff. But the emphasis on promoting the gospel just is fascinating to me, because really the primary purpose was we got to get a colony in there to offset the Spanish, to make our headway there. Now, of course, they picked the worst possible place because they were looking for gold, and Virginia is not known as a major exporter of gold. They'd have to go farther south and hit Georgia, but that's not going to happen for another 150 years. Okay, next slide. Okay, so the religious colonies, Maryland, Catholic colony founded by Lord Baltimore, otherwise known as Sir George Calvert. Now, his son, Cecil Calvert, would take over the colony when George was called back home. Calvert is a Catholic. The colony is established in 1634. This is after the English Civil War, the split. And so Catholics in England are facing serious persecution. Henry VIII has worked hard to establish the Anglican Church, to break with the Catholic Church. By law, you could only worship in the Church of England. And so Catholics were, under persecution. And George Calvert, who is a good Catholic, and yet he was also a very good friend of James I, says, let's set up a colony. We don't want to go to Virginia. We want to go a little farther north, and so they get the Baltimore territory, which is originally Maryland, Baltimore, after Baltimore. This is what we call a proprietary colony. What that means is it is granted by the crown, but it is the personal property of Lord Baltimore. There were six of the original colonies which were called proprietary colonies. In other words, they're established, the proprietor spends all the money, takes all of the risk, and then once the colony gets going, the king gets all the taxes. So, yeah. Sounds familiar. Now, Baltimore is an interesting fellow. He is a Greek scholar, master of ancient Hebrew and ancient Aramaic, and he knew that King James was trying to get a translation of the Bible that wasn't the Wycliffe and wasn't the Geneva Bible. He wanted something that was specific to the Anglican Church, and so James was putting together a committee to do a translation, and Lord Baltimore says, I want to be involved in that. A couple of reasons. One, Baltimore really loved the Word of God, and he wanted an accurate translation. And secondly, there were certain Catholic doctrines he wanted to try and keep going. So there was the sincere motive, and then there was the strategic motive. And it was the influence of Lord Baltimore that the King James takes the word baptism, which means to immerse, and just brings it over as baptism rather than actually translate it, because, as you know, the Catholics sprinkled, and the Church of England was going back and forth on that. And by 1606, the Church of England said, well, we'll sprinkle it. And so when they get to the translation of the King James Bible in 1613, they come to that word, and Calvert says, well, let's just bring it over and create a new English word called a baptism. Shakespeare invented a whole bunch of funny words, so we may as well too. And that's true. Shakespeare invented all sorts of wild words. So, Calvert then helps James with the translation. Now, in the midst of all of this, Calvert is getting his team together, trying to establish the colony. It takes him 22 years to get the colony going. And so in the midst of this, he's working with James in the translation of the Bible. He looks over the texts. The other thing Calvert did was he spent a lot of money sending scholars into the Middle East looking for original copies of those ancient texts. Now, this is 330 years before the archaeological rules that we have today, and so Calvert got a lot of his documents by either bribing somebody who had it, hiring somebody to steal it, or bribing government officials. And so those documents then became part of the Museum of England, and it wasn't until 1958 that many of those original documents were returned to the Museum in Cairo or the Museum in Jerusalem. But he spent a lot of money getting all that stuff, and as a result, the museum in England has, up until 1958, had the largest collection of fragments and documents of the Bible in the world. Until, of course, the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls and then a whole bunch more. So, gives you a little bit about Maryland, gives you a little bit about biblical history. Maryland is a religious haven. It was originally established to be a Catholic colony. That was its primary mission. 1636, it's a Catholic haven. In 1639, a number of Quakers were on their way to the New World. Their ship got blown off course. It landed in Maryland. The royal governor said, not a problem. I'll give you these three towns, and they settled there. By 1640, Maryland had a strict provision in its charter for religious freedom. Whatever denomination you were, you could come. Maryland was unusual at this time. It was one of the few colonies that did not have an official religion. The colonies that existed at this point was the Virginia Colony, which was by charter Church of England. The Massachusetts colonies were primarily a Congregationalist. The New Hampshire Colony, which had split off the Massachusetts Colony, were Methodist. The Connecticut Colony, which was coming about the same time, which is splitting off of Massachusetts, New Hampshire, it's Connecticut, it's a whole hoot. Thomas Hooker was a founder there. He was Quaker. No, that's not Thomas Hooker, who was the general in the Civil War. He didn't live that long. And then, of course, Rhode Island is splitting off of Massachusetts. Rhode Island is splitting off of Massachusetts. We'll get to all of those. So most of the colonies, North and South Carolina, were Church of England. New Jersey is a little bit later, but they'll be Quaker. So most of the colonies had an official church that was part of the governmental structure. And a couple of these colonies will get a real hoot out of some of the rules. North Carolina is my favorite. When we get there, you'll have some fun with that. But Maryland was a Catholic colony, but it was not the official church of the colony. And they were the first to really promote religious freedom and religious immigration. Well, I remember, again, these are proprietary colonies. They are the property of the founder. Yeah, because remember, he and King James were friends, and he had James write into the charter that it is perpetual that the proprietor has the right to determine the religion. Maryland is actually unusual in that. Maryland is the only colony that had a specific statement giving the proprietor the right to choose a religion. And this, by the way, is well before the Westphalia Treaty of 1642. Nobody? Treaty of Westphalia, 1642. It solved the third major war between France and England, and what it said was to the ruler goes the religion. That was our first statement. The charter was designed to break the power of the Catholic Church, because the Catholic Church basically had the two swords doctrine, that the Church held the sword of spiritual authority and the sword of civil authority. And the Treaty of Westphalia says, well, no, the civil authority goes with the ruler. And that's part of the Treaty of Westphalia, is an outgrowth of what's going on in the colonial settlements here. Lord Baltimore does get a special exception because of his close ties to King James. James was an odd duck. Next. Rhode Island. Rhode Island is founded specifically for religious freedom. And it was founded on the idea of separation of church and state. Roger Williams left the Massachusetts Bay Colony because they were arguing over baptism. I mean, at the end of the day, Williams was arguing with the colonial leaders over baptism. He believed in immersion, they believed in sprinkling. Williams apparently believed that baptism was an essential component of salvation. The Massachusetts colonists, who were Puritans and Pilgrims, thought that baptism was a symbol of the salvation experience. And so Williams packs his bags and splits off and forms the colony of Rhode Island. Shortly after that, Anne Hutchinson, who is having a fight herself with the colonists, she was having a fight over a couple of things. One, she agreed with Williams about the baptism issue. Secondly, she believed that women could serve as deacons in the church. And so she split off from them and joined Rhode Island. And she and Williams first worked together pretty well, and then they had a fight, and they split up. So he founded Providence, and she moved farther west and founded the other major city in Rhode Island. I'm drawing a blank. Salem, maybe. I don't know if there's some name changes. They applied for a colonial charter. Rhode Island was then given a colonial charter in 1636. That charter acted as the state constitution through the Revolution, through the constitutional period, and they didn't revise it until 1843. The Rhode Island colony was the first one to have a Bill of Rights, and that Bill of Rights was well adopted to our Bill of Rights. It protected religious freedom. The Rhode Island Bill of Rights has my favorite. The Third Amendment says that any adult male citizen may use his firearm as he wishes on his property. So you walk on somebody's property, they have a constitutional right to... and there's interesting case law about that. Now, the Rhode Island gun amendment was adopted by other colonies with a little modification, and then the huge debate about the Second Amendment in the U.S. Constitution is a whole separate thing, but that's my favorite. The Charter of Rhode Island protected religious freedom. People could worship as they chose. But they couldn't be compelled to worship at any particular thing. There couldn't be taxes to support the church. Rhode Island was one of only two colonies that did not use tax revenue to support the church. The other one was South Carolina. At the time, the Massachusetts charter, the Pennsylvania and New York charters covered all the way up through Maine, and so they just carved out that little sliver, yeah. And frankly, Williams and Hutchinson didn't think they'd attract that many other people, so they never expected it. Anne Hutchinson was a member of the Church of England. She came over. She was the daughter and granddaughter of members of the British Parliament. Her great-grandfather was a member of the House of Lords, so she's a muckety-muck. She wanted to come to the colonies because, obviously, if you're in Church of England, you can't be. The Church of England doesn't have deacons. What they have are a bishop, archbishop, priests, and then laity. And you couldn't be a priest. And she thought that women could serve in authoritative positions. And so she left the Church of England and became a Quaker. And what she discovered when she got to Massachusetts was that the Quakers there, if you've ever been to a Quaker or Society of Friends service, Doug, have you ever been to a Society? I had a friend when I was in college and in high school who was a Brethren. Quakers and Brethren are related. And I love the Brethren church. You sit around, and when the service starts, you start with prayer. And then one of the adult males is designated as the speaker. And he comes up and delivers basically a homily. He talks for 15, 20 minutes. And then for the rest of the service, all of the other adult males get to question him about his doctrine. Could you imagine, Pastor, you finish preaching a sermon, then we all get to ask questions. And you have to defend the lesson that you've given. And then after all of the men have raised questions, then the women get to ask questions. It's really, really fascinating. And I tell you what, knowing what it was you brought, yeah, you can't get away with it, well, the Lord just gave me that. You know, in a brethren circle, that's not going to fly. You have to have biblical defenses of what you're doing. And every adult male that they rotate through, and so every adult male throughout the year has to come up and present something and be hammered for it. And she thought that the Quakers would appreciate her willing to take a leadership role. They weren't. And so she broke off and took a few of her group, about 120 of her followers, moved into Rhode Island, and she and William, and there's all sorts of stories about she and William's having a close relationship, and none of that's true. But she established her section of Quakerism in Rhode Island, and then she and William's had a falling out, but rather than split the colonies, they agreed that religious freedom is essential to what they believe. They just created two separate towns. The Rhode Island Brethren are a descendant of the movement that Hutchinson brought with her, so they are still there. Fascinating woman. She wrote an enormous volume of material defending women taking deacon's roles. Some of it's persuasive, some of it's really kind of out there. But then she also wrote commentaries on the Gospels. She wrote a wonderful commentary on the life of Mary Magdalene, which received no attention at all until women's studies came about in 1960. And then she was the cause celeb until they realized, oh, wait a minute, she's a Christian, and she's talking about these Christian values, and then she's fallen off the table.